Welcome one, welcome all. This is the Next Step Radio Show on the Antimatter Zone Radio Network. I am your host, Jacob Appleman. Thank you for joining us today. This will be episode number 25. The website for the show is 3Ws, Infowarts.com. That's Infowarts.com. If you'd like to get a hold of me, the email address, thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. That is thenextstepradioshow@charter.net. The intro music there, that is a group called the Yoshida Brothers, and the song is called Kodo. We have a very special guest today. Similar to the No State Project, this will be just the introduction and what I hope to be a series of interviews along the topic. The topic in general this time is free energy. And that takes lots of forms. There's lots of ideas. And there's lots of, for lack of a better phrase, BS out there. So I hope to, through these series of free energy interviews, boil these down to who's on the right track, who's on the wrong track, what's feasible, what's doable, how to implement it, things like that. I wanted to start today with a man named Randy Powell. He and another guy named Marco Roden are definitely on top of this subject in the mathematics department. What I like about these gentlemen's work, and we'll speak with Randy Powell today first, is it's the essence of the technology. Regardless of how one would construct a free energy device, what type of free energy device, I think it's essential to start with the basics of the science and math. Vortex-based math is how they term it. Torsion physics is another way I've heard it described. Basically, you know, Newtonian physics, Einstein, you know, these types of things deal with earthly laws of physics. Torsion-based physics and torsion-based math deal with universal principles. There's a slight distinction there, but I think further research will absolutely be necessary by the listener. This, like I said, will be an introduction to the nuts and bolts math of the whole deal. And then as we progress, we'll move into applications, devices, generators, craft, vehicles, trains, that type of thing. But I thought it'd be really important to start with the basics that, you know, a lot of people tend to just skip right past, because if this is understood well, instead of everybody flocking to, you know, a free energy type car or flying disc, you know, this could have universal applications. And that's why I want as many people as possible to be familiar as possible with the basics of this. And you'll see as the interview progresses that's kind of the plan here, to implement and understand the basics first and then spread this idea throughout people and that have expertise in different areas, so this thing can be a true grassroots of, by, and for the people type operation. I would highly encourage you to watch the videos I have posted at Infowarts.com underneath the interview. If you're listening to this on Blog Talk or Facebook or anywhere else posted throughout the web, head over to 3Ws, Infowarts.com, Infowarts.com. There's a few videos there. Some of them are the first video in a series. Take some time, familiarize yourself with this, because you never know. You may have a piece of this. You may know something that could add to this. You may have an idea that can complement this. Like I said, this is the, we're going to start with the vortex-based math or torsion physics math, or some names ascribed to it. You know, and coming up with a neat name is something we talk about in the interview also, because math you know, kind of gives you an idea of what it's about because there are numbers involved. But this is a lot bigger and a lot broader than math and, you know, adding and subtracting. This is how the universe operates. This is how molecules spin. This is how atoms spin. This is how planets spin. This is how universes spin. And everything in between, from tornadoes to hurricanes to, you know, the jet stream. Understanding this kind of science, like I said, could then branch off into a plethora of arenas and a whole host of technologies. But first thing first, let's get the math down, the physics down, and spread this as far and wide as possible. Donate to Randy Powell's group. Let's get this topic bigger than UFOs, bigger than the conspiracy, bigger than the channeling and the Pleiadians. Not that I have anything against those topics. I'm thoroughly interested in individually studying all of those things. But at this point in the quote-unquote truth movement, prioritizing, I think, needs to be done now. And as much as I would like to meet a Martian, I would love to never have to pay a utility bill again, even more so. So if we could get humanity free, you know, from basic tyranny of each other, then that opens the door to a lot more universal exploration. And then maybe we can actually be ready to share our planet with visitors, once we're able to actually share it with each other. So think about it. Free energy. The math is here. The physics is here. The devices are here. The people are here. Let's get this topic bigger and badder than the banksters, than the Petro Boys, than the military industrial complex, because essentially all of those are only able to tyrannize us with our consent. Let's withdraw our consent and not just sit in a circle and stare at each other. Let's put forth that effort into projects like Randy Powell's and Marco Rodin's. Let's skip the next conspiracy convention and get the Tesla Tech conventions. You know, number one, like I said, let's reprioritize. This is here. This is now. We can make a difference in our lifetimes. It's only going to take us and our action. Soon as we're ready to choose it, it's there for us. Please, 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 please spread this far and wide. This is a topic that can truly free us, but it's going to take us to do it. Without any further ado, let's just get straight into the interview with Randy Powell.
Well, I'm glad we could do it. And, you know, I think this is the first radio program I've been on, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, after seeing that TED TV thing, I thought you'd be booked up, because there's a lot of people, like I said, onto torsion physics as a general thing. You know, with the whole alien hype, that's one of the messages I'm trying to get out to people, is this isn't super advanced. Compared to what we've been doing, you could label it super advanced, but what I tell people, there's really only one way to do it. So whether the UFOs are from Saturn or Mars or, you know, Alpha Centauri or the Pleiadians, I vote we just start looking a lot closer to home, because if the Nazis figured out torsion physics, you know, it's not outrageous to think that these crafts everybody keeps seeing, you know, might quite possibly be man-made.
Yeah, well, I think the principle is, regardless of who it is, that it's the same throughout the universe. And the way that we're trying to approach what we're doing, you know, I mean, people can call it science, people call it pseudoscience, you know, because standard science is always based on trial and error.
Right.
And method is analysis. Which is, you know, it's in every science, it's in physics, it's in medicine. And, you know, as you go into things and into them and into them, you know, you can increasingly get into the complexity of structure, you can break down all the parts, but it's never going to give you the full picture of what a human body is or of what of what anything is.
Right.
It's too hard to do it by breaking it down into its little pieces. So we're trying to take a different approach, and it's difficult. It's a difficult approach for a lot of people who've been trained in conventional science, because we're not taking the approach of analysis. We're taking the approach of synthesis, which is bringing things together. It's basing all of our work on axioms that always have to be true. So it's a different way of looking at mathematics. But the bottom line is our coils, even these primitive coils that people are building in their bedrooms and garages, you know, some of them an ounce of copper, no core, they're very powerful, and there's nothing about standard electrical theory that predicts any of the results that we're getting. And, you know, just things like the experiment I showed in the TED Talk, I think are proof of concept that we have something going on. Can we produce all the wild and outrageous claims? You know, I believe that those are the implications of our work. But, of course, that we're not even close to getting all these results. We need to build the teams of people who can learn the mathematics and apply it to their fields. And it takes the right kind of people, because it's very difficult for a lot of analytical scientists. And I'm not against them. Really, my goal is to try and work with them.
Right.
Because I certainly can't comprehend every science in the world on my own. In every detail of them all. But I think we have a method by the mathematics to get an insight into all these different avenues, to show their connections.
Right. It's an excellent starting point for lots of different paths.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just universal principles, universal truths. It's a mathematical discovery, and the claim of the discovery and the claim that I'm willing to argue for is that the mathematics is perfect, that there is no inconsistency in it whatsoever. Now, for some people, they say, well, internal consistency isn't enough. You've got to have experimental result. And I would agree with that. And I would agree that we have done some interesting experiments already. I already have coils that are more efficient than standard coils that could give, even these primitive ones, could give you up to 30% energy savings using just some of the very simple things we've been doing. But our goal is really to take it to a whole other level by getting the public involved, educating them about what we're doing. It's not incomprehensible. It's actually really, it's very easy. I think the reason why I've been able to take the math so much more advanced than anyone else that I've really personally encountered in terms of what I've done with the torus and where I'm going with it now is honestly because I work on it in the most simplest way possible. I have to have answers for every little, slow, agonizing question so that there's an understanding of what our concept really is and how to work with it. And so far the results bear out. So
okay, so let's kind of start back towards the beginning a little bit. Let's talk about how you came across this idea, information, and kind of the genesis of it. Now and I've heard it through your YouTube bit, but without telling that hour long story, you know, how did you become interested in this, and where did this type of thought come from for you?
Sure. Well, for me, you know, this whole thing has primarily been a spiritual journey. You know, that's hard for certain people to stomach. When I'm going into the more scientific aspect, it makes some people just write it off. But to me, and to actually most of the people that I've worked with, I find that these are the things that are coming through that are actually leading most all people into great discoveries. None of us are smart enough to figure it out. It's only by the grace of the higher coherent awareness of the universe that we can get inspiration and insight. So with me, with my personal journey, it started when I was about 4 or 5 years old. And the short of the story, which is on my YouTube videos, And people ask me a lot of questions about those, and honestly, I've never even watched them. We filmed them once, and I've never looked at them, so a lot of times I can't remember what exactly I talked about on that. But I do know the basic story, which is that when I was around 5, I got really obsessed with this question about what did a human soul look like? How could you recognize a disembodied human, namely because my father had passed away, and I was interested in the next world and in what happened after death. So, you know, the story that I relate there is that I ended up seeing an image of the Caduceus on a hospital wall, and I immediately grabbed onto that and said, that's it. That's what a human soul looked like. And I used to sit in church with my parents and imagine it inside my body and imagine it flying up my spine and out of my head and going to heaven where it landed on cloud 9. And, you know, that was something that I lived with for years throughout my childhood. It was just this thing that I had, and I never questioned it because I was just young, and you don't really, you know, question your imagination so much at that point in your life. At least I didn't. But as I got older, it started really coming back to me, especially as I got interested in the study of mysticism and meditation and shamanism, that I saw that the same symbol was throughout all the world and that it was associated with the number 9. And I just found that really mind-blowing. I mean, I saw something there that I knew that was something I was onto as a little kid. And there's no coherent or logical, or I say coherent, that maybe is not the right word, but there's no way by common logic that I would have been able to come up with that through some kind of thought process or have learned it from somewhere and then see it with the kind of prevalence that I did in all the world's mystical traditions. So I became extremely intrigued, and the further I went into those experiences and altered states of consciousness, I only became solidified in the truth of that vision. And of course I saw the connections with DNA and with all these things, with these shapes. So that was basically how I started to get onto this notion of the Taurus and the vortex energy.
I interviewed a lady named Crystal Clark. She wrote a book called Who Are We Really? 101, Return of the Shaman. And it's a collection of information and works from various places. And the conclusion is, and she terms it the sacred science or the law of one. And it's basically how spirituality and technology or science, you know, at some point split, and how, you know, reunifying them is ultimately the way to proceed forward. And you said it right, because this is a spiritual journey. What's going on with the New World Order and the economy and the dumbing down and the poisoning of the food and the water all has a spiritual component. And when people just attack it economically or scientifically, that part is lost, because what I try to bring to my fellow truthers is that the creator is the source. There's multiple names for it. You know, you can call it whatever you like. I just say the creator of the universe, you know, built this cosmos. And whatever manifestation we call life takes on is ultimately derived from the one source. So if we're experiencing the New World Order or these dark luminaries wishing to enslave and poison the population, there's actually ultimately a divine purpose to that. And the spiritual component being left out is where so many people get stuck, because they think it's about power or money or domination or fractional reserve banking, which are all components. But the higher aspect of it is our own spiritual ineptitude is allowing this. And I don't know where you...
Well, and that's, you know, for me, that's a place where communing with spirit and with these numbers can give you a different insight into energy and life and how it manifests and how it works. And let me give an example of the difference. And, you know, all these, to me, everything is an analogy and a metaphor for other things, because it's all self-contained and we're all one, essentially. But in science, they say, you know, that a black hole is an infinitely dense piece of material that collapses into infinity and everything just goes into it, and they don't even know really what it's doing. And it's because of this misunderstanding of how polarity and positive and negative and how these things really work. In the way that we're proposing, you can see an interplay between all these things. So, you know, you can look at world affairs, you can see all the negativity and all that, and then we see at the same time this huge boom of information sharing and enlightenment going on and people really waking up and changing and starting to eat better. And at the same time, you can still see a lot of the decay happening. But what it is as everything approaches the center, as it approaches its convergence, both the positive and negative are being concentrated together. They're being compressed and squeezed together, and they're happening with a much greater intensity and rapidity as you get towards the center point or towards the convergence or towards the axis of anything, whether it's in physics or it's in the change of world culture. And I don't think we're at the end of the negativity that we're going to see or the growth and enlightenment by any means. But the concept that we're proposing is that eventually nothing really ever totally reaches the center. It never really ends. It just inverts. It comes out the other side. So things are dyed. Things die, for instance, even in the universe. As the universe is expanding, it's giving off all its heat. Eventually, you know, the stars give out, they burn out, and they're brought back in to the top half of the universe, re-accelerated, heated, purified, in some senses disintegrated, and just reborn in a purified form. And that's essentially what this teaching is. It shows you how to make energy self-sustaining and self-purifying and ecological.
Because that's how the universe operates, whether it's the macrocosm or the microcosm. You know,
I believe that way. I mean, if you look out, you know, at some of these, celestial events, and you see, you know, like some of these quasars, and they're shooting these tremendous streams of, interstellar nebulous gases out, and that all that matter is not coming from nowhere. You know, it's not just popping out of nothing. It's being imploded and exploded, and that's how energy works. And so if you can find the proper pathways that it wants to take, you can find the way to control the heat, which is one of the big problems in doing fusion, and pretty much everything else. I mean, supercomputers, all this stuff is controlling the temperature is the very difficult part. And you can also learn the pathways that things want to move in so that you get rid of resistance. And that's one of the big things that's been found in the technologies that I'm developing, is that there's almost no resistance in the electricity when it's being passed through the coil. It's so efficient. And I believe by creating these geometries that we're working with in these torus models with increasing precision, you can eliminate resistance altogether, and that's ultimately the key to perpetuating the vortex. And it's not just the curvature and the torsion. And, you know, see, the thing is, many, many people have been on to the idea of the vortex and of torsion. Victor Schauberger was probably the greatest, in my opinion. Many, many people have talked about it. A lot of the Russian scientists did a lot of torsion physics research, a lot of great people. But the thing that I think vortex-based mathematics has to contribute that's unique is its modeling of a higher dimensional energy, which is sustaining the vortex. And that is the energy that we're ultimately trying to get at, which we call spirit or etherons. It's an emanation that comes off the axis of anything, from the center out, from the center of mass out. And it penetrates everything. Nothing resists it. You can't ever get rid of it. Pushes time forward. And it causes the universe to spin around and everything. It's really the secret of the gyroscope and how animation and vibration works. And that's what we're proposing with the mathematics.
And when I first saw this, and as I studied torsion physics, Terence McKenna's presentations on time wave zero were a pretty good introduction to, though he didn't, you know, fully quantify and wrap it up in a neat little bow, you could tell he was getting real close to it. And I term it wild fluctuations, like you said, as you approach the center, you know, you see this massive burst of evil and also these massive bursts of enlightenment. And it seems to come really quick. You know, global warming and global cooling are happening rapidly in wild fluctuations. Yeah. Interpersonal relationships, as I look around with my peers and community, there's people, you know, getting in fights and making up in wild fluctuations.
Absolutely.
And that's all a good clue as we come to the center point of a toroid or torus, because it's like the Mayan calendar would be a kind of a pictographical representation. The end date isn't 2012. The end / beginning date is what they're trying to convey, I think, to people, that this end of a cycle isn't the end of the world. It's the end of this revolution.
It's never the end because this energy is eternal. And because you can never get rid of it, and it's constantly transforming the physical world. And so time, energy, all of this, it's an infinity of duration. It's a perpetual motion machine. You know, and when you use the word perpetual motion, a lot of people always ask me, they say, why don't you apply for patents? And I always said, well, you know, the patent office officially doesn't review perpetual motion machines. And because it's traditionally mechanical perpetual motion machines, they never work because you're giving off heat and you lose energy. Of course, that comes back to this idea I'm talking about controlling the heat in these technologies. But, you know, the one thing that a lot of people never bring up is that from the beginning of, let's just say, the conventional idea of the Big Bang, there's been electrons spinning around these atoms close to the speed of light, and at least that's what they tell us, and they're never slowing down.
They're still going
and going and going and going. And so as far as we know, now people can say, well, eventually, billions of years away, you know, they'll stop. But that's as much of a conjecture as anything.
Right. It's eternal and it's infinite, and it you know, like you're saying, it regenerates and because the infinity symbol, the eight, as is above, so is below. You know, the completion of a cycle is also at that middle dot, the beginning of the next cycle, and on it goes for infinity, apparently, or as far as we can even comprehend that, but. Yeah,
it's a spin continuum is what we call it, you know. It's a and that's essentially what the physical world is. Another way you can call it is a bounded infinity. It's an infinity of duration. And perhaps the spiritual world, you could say, even is an infinity of direction. To me, it's a placeless reality. It's non-local, if you want to use a scientific term. What's localized, though, always is the physical world. It's always a bounded continuum or a system. And so that's the idea that we're onto. I mean, as far as our external knowledge about the universe, and I'm always very skeptical at the approach of modern science because it's based on approximations. It doesn't mean that it can't predict some things pretty accurately or that it can't, that it's totally flawed. But I think that the approach can be modified, and that's what this math has to offer. It's a simple way of modifying your approach to any technology to make it more efficient. But to me, ultimately, there's no technology on this planet, whether it's secret military technology or any kind of technology that we know or don't know, that is even close to the technology of the human body, the human temple. Because the human temple, to me, is the vessel, the ultimate vessel for the spirit. And it has capabilities that we haven't even begun to tap into. And so all this teaching and all the application we do to technology ultimately, to me, relates back to the brain, relates back to the health of the body, and being able to harness this energy so that we can understand the mathematics. And I'm not basing it on anything external. I'm only really basing it on its own perfection and perfect consistency. It's kind of like a philosopher's stone. So we're trying to look at something in its most perfectly resonant state. And when you put the geometric configuration of something in its most perfectly resonant state, what you should get is pure sound, pure tone. You can call it the word if you want to. It's the sound of perfectly self-stabilized, oriented spin. And so just like right now, I'm hearing some static, or, you know, you walk past a light pole and you can hear the electricity moving, right? And it sounds like this is, you know, it's a static sound. I'm trying to get rid of all that static and create a perfect harmonious spin electrically or through any medium, really. And I believe by doing that, you can tap into this energy, whether it's through technology or through intonation, using sound to control the human body, to control the systems in the body, and to harness this higher dimensional energy.
And just as a side note, when you were doing that intonation at the end of the YouTube videos, it was kind of scared me, because when I grew up, I was born in Casper, Wyoming. I lived in Colorado, Montana, Kansas, Missouri. My parents were hippies, and we kind of, you know, just went about a little bit of everywhere. And at one point in time when we lived in Wyoming, my mom had a paper route, and we had a huge station wagon, and she would load us up in the back, you know, while she delivered papers, and we could finish sleeping. But as the paper route neared its end, you know, there's not a whole lot to do. There's no, you know, Game Boy or anything exciting in, you know, the middle of Wyoming in the 70s. So I used to make that noise just in the back seat. I don't know where it came from. And when you did it, like I said, it kind of scared me, because I used to do that instinctively just out of boredom on a paper route in the middle of Wyoming, you know.
I find in working with kids that they do it all the time anyway, and they're always making sounds.
Right.
And these ideas are very natural to them, and they actually enjoy doing it. And one of my biggest goals, as well as Marco's, has been to try and apply this work to using sound to help regenerate the brain. It's what's called neuroplasticity, which is the regeneration of the brain and gaining proper use of the brain. And one of the things that they found, I have a friend who's a researcher in autism, and they've actually been doing a lot of work showing how sound affects the children using sound pulses. They even use it for soldiers in combat because of the way that it affects the attention and the body. And so, not that I'm making the intonation necessarily correctly. I mean, we're all approximating at this point.
Right.
That's really, for me, the point of perfecting and understanding the mathematics. For me personally, though, I would love to see free energy for the world and space travel and all these things. I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime. Maybe I will. Maybe, you know, I don't ever assume that I know what direction anything is taken. If you had asked me if I'd be having this conversation with you, 10 years ago, I would have had no concept of it whatsoever. But what I do know is that in my spiritual experiences and my experiences in altered states of consciousness, this teaching has come through more than anything. And the more that I have refined my understanding of it, the more effective I found my journeys into those other realities are, and the more control I have over my environment. And this is really my ultimate goal. So I guess for the people out there who accuse me of being a pseudoscientist and an alchemist and a sorcerer and all these things, I mean, in a way, they're actually right. The only problem is that it still works when you apply it to technology, so I guess that throws a little stick in their spokes.
And that's one of the huge points Crystal Clark makes in her book, Who Are We Really?, is this is all the same science. It can be used for, what we consider negative or positive. The same, everybody's familiar with HARP in the alternative media crowd. But that would be like also a giant, Rife machine. You could heal disease and fix polluted water and lots of atmospheric anomalies with that same technology, operating at a different frequency.
The problem is with what they're doing, though. Even with I respect Royal Raymond Rife a lot, and I respect the Rife technologies. And believe me, he was a genius far beyond anything that I can comprehend for the most part, but the problem is whether it's HARP or using the Rife technology, because the Rife technologies have been successful for some people, but some people have also claimed that they actually made their cancers explode and actually ended up killing them. So there's that dual side there, and the reason is because it's an invasive or an external approach.
Right.
It may not be quite as invasive as, say, surgery, but it's still an invasive approach. And this is one of the biggest issues in science and mathematics today, and it's a unique thing that vortex math can contribute. So when I say using vortex math as a new approach, this is an example of what I'm talking about. Now, if you look at physics, you have something called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And that's basically the foundation of modern theoretical physics and of quantum mechanics, which is, essentially, maybe a little simplistic, but it's saying essentially that you can never know, the position and the momentum of an electron at the same time, which means you can never truly know its position. You know its present position, you don't know its future position, etc. So it's saying that there's always an uncertainty going on at the subatomic level. But the reason that that goes on is because they have to affect it with light to observe it.
Right.
And so even the quantum physicists will admit, well, if we don't affect it with light, actually it moves in the way that it's predicted to move. But you have to affect it with light to observe it. So when you do, it affects the electron, and the energy state of the atom changes because it's on such a small scale that even one photon is going to change it. And so it's the same problem. It's an invasive approach. What I believe about Etheron energy is that it always comes from the inside out. Even in your DNA, there's a magnetic field in the major groove, which Marco in his original work on DNA predicted, and it's found to be there. It exists. They say it's because DNA is made up of phosphates, and phosphates have a negative electric charge, and then there's always an associated magnetic field. But to me, it's no coincidence that the numbers that we have that make the exact shape of the DNA helix and also predict the magnetic field that's there, to me, that's beyond coincidence. And what I believe is that the center of that magnetism is this energy, which is a flux. It's a pulse. It makes everything implode and explode, and it pulses. And eliciting that energy without being invasive, you can put the body into its most proper state of resonance. So it'll be at its most effective and its optimum performance. And that's what I believe ultimately is the potential using this as a technology. It's more to allow the technology to harness the energy. And so because all our numbers, because I'm saying they're always perfect and they always exist in equal proportion, if you create the electric motion, the electrical motion in the specific geometric array according to my designs, you create at the same time the field and the energy. They always exist together. And so that, to me, is more the approach for healing, is that the true healing always comes from within, and that you don't actually do it by targeting things with specific frequencies. I believe that the human body is capable of harnessing any frequency. It's just a matter of balance and what's the application.
Now, Greg Braden, are you familiar with his work?
To some degree, yeah. I know who he is.
I've listened to one interview of his, and he also has a video on the internet. And in that, they're talking about true prayer and how that works. And in that video, there's a clip of this lady healing cancer.
I did see that. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, and so I dubbed that the placebo effect, where you can take a sugar pill and the act of thinking that is the cure, you then heal yourself. Because like you're saying, ultimately all healing is an internal function.
Right.
You can put Neosporin and a Band-Aid on a cut, but that's not healing it. It keeps germs and microbes away while you heal it yourself internally. So is that kind of the concept, that it's not really the external function, that it's all of healing comes internally?
I believe so. I mean, I believe that at our maximum potential, the human being doesn't require any external apparatus for healing. But at the same time, I recognize that at least at our current state of evolution, we aren't tapping into that fully. So I believe that the technologies can still be helpful to us at this time. But it's such a political subject, and it's very hard to figure out how to move forward with it because, the experimentation in medicine always has so many issues. So, I haven't done a whole lot of work in going in that direction because I know, even though I'm most interested in it, it's going to take time. Also, if we had the funding for our project, to some degree, I could then probably devote a lot more time to researching the geometry of the DNA helix and how various lattice structures and chemicals are docking up into that, and how it's fitting together mathematically. And that's just something that hasn't been my biggest area of study. I've mostly been working in the side of doing the electrical engineering, the energy work, and also just developing the mathematics so that as I get the opportunity to work with more and more technical people, I have more and more insight to give them of how to really perfect this torus, how to understand how many circuits you need, how they work, what's the ratios, to really truly define, instead of making our mathematics abstract or imaginary, to truly define the function of each and every number and what it's doing at every given moment with zero uncertainty, because we're doing it from the inside out mathematically instead of being invasive.
Now, is the golden ratio the Fibonacci sequence, does any of that play into the folding and unfolding of the math?
Oh, absolutely. All these things are connected. Originally, Marco's claim was that there's no function in any branch of math that can't be performed using this. And so far, that hasn't been proved false. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's true either,
right?
But I have yet to find anything that I didn't get an insight into using this mathematics in terms of conventional you know, standard things like the Fibonacci. Now, I have some work in my videos showing something that we refer to as spires, even though it's not really the proper term. They're really more spirals. But that gets a little more, you know, for the radio format, I think I'll probably lose people if I go into right. the details of the mathematics. But the Fibonacci, it's all in there. All these patterns are revealed when you, I mean, the Fibonacci itself, or the Fibonacci sequence, if you reduce the numbers to single digits, it makes a 24-digit repeating pattern that has the doubling sequences from the torus embedded within it. So it's definitely, it's in there. And that, you know, when I showed that to a conventional mathematician, he was really surprised by that. They said there was nothing that he had ever done that would have made him expect. In fact, he was telling me the whole time I was doing it that it wasn't going to pan out until we got past that 24th number and he saw that it was repeating. You know, another thing is Nassim Harriman has been, you know, a fairly prominent guy doing work on the unified field in physics. He did a thing where he overlaid the Fibonacci spiral over top of Marco's original equation, and it goes right to the center point, but not quite. It's still a little off, showing that our center point in our equation is actually even more precise than the Fibonacci spiral. And that was another thing. He himself was very shocked and stunned by that when he saw that it did what it did. So, and that video is actually up on YouTube as well.
And let me ask you this. Was he doing his stuff and you guys were doing your stuff and then you found each other? Or did anybody have any influence as the progression was taking place, if that question makes any sense?
Yeah, well, I think I understand what you're saying. I have never personally met Nassim. Marco and I are good friends. You know, respect Nassim's work. I don't agree with every aspect of his work. I think in certain respects, it is fundamentally different than vortex-based mathematics, but the essential idea is along the same lines. And I do think that the geometry he's working with is connected. I just think there's certain things about the works that don't line up exactly, but maybe it's just because we don't all understand the relationships between them. So, I mean, I try and support the work that he's doing because I think we're all on to a similar idea. For me personally, with the vortex-based mathematics, what was so fascinating about it, well, one was obviously my own synchronistic experiences and lifelong interest in the number 9, which is the essence of vortex math. And the other thing was that it was such a thorough and direct and simple explanation. It doesn't require any complicated knowledge that can't be comprehended by just any person. It's a thorough explanation of how something works. And more than that, it's a thorough explanation of how to apply it to technology. And that's, you know, for me, the big thing. There's a lot of theoretical science out there. There's a lot of ideas. Some of them are very brilliant, but there are very few that can actually be directly applied, or where at least people are offering the idea of how to directly apply them and giving a clear and consistent notion of what to do with this information. And that's really the unique thing about our project. You know, now as far as between Marco and myself, I'm very confident that Marco supports my work. I think Marco has been, you know, just so inundated with many things that he hasn't, even though him and I have talked about it quite a bit, he hasn't had the chance to properly review the details of my work, because he and I can only really talk by phone, and we, you know, even when we've been together in person, it's been for a very short few days while we were presenting at a conference. So it's very difficult to get all this done. But speaking for myself, I don't think that, you know, the work that I have done changed a lot for the flow and direction of this mathematics. I mean, I'm the only person who's ever come along in this whole thing and suggested, solely based on the principles of the math and nothing else, that the technology should be designed in a completely different way. And I think I have thorough proofs for my explanations. A little bit of that is up online. Most of the videos I posted online was, I mean, there's been so much done since those that really needs to go up to help people get the full explanation, and I'm working on that to get more videos out there, and we'd like to do a full book and DVD release because I believe that I've solved the equation. Though, and I, when I say that, I don't mean to say that there's not an infinite more amount of knowledge to be derived from it and more things to learn, and I'm not trying to push anyone away from working on it. There's plenty of room for everyone to make their own original and unique discoveries. I never expected to make unique discoveries. It just happened that I did, and that it changed what was understood about the math. So I've put forth that really until my work is understood and properly reviewed that, you know, no one is properly doing the math. You know, honestly, I'm trying to look through all the machinations of all the different schemers out there and to not go against them or for them, but simply to say, look, we've all got to come to this place where we realize that none of us are going to make it if we don't make a change in the way we're doing things. And there are people out there, not just myself, many, many people who have the skills and ability to make these things happen. What we have to do, though, we need to get together with the people and figure out how to do it without the world going into chaos.
Right, and the first part of that sentence is the key, get together, because not only would this line of thinking revolutionize, you know, everything from electric motors to, you know, surgery, the way we interact with each other, the domination and the profit making and the hoarding and the scarcity and all of that, you know, is going to have to come into line also for this to work. And I think that's the beauty of your approach and why ultimately I think your methods will prevail, because the people that want to patent and copyright and incorporate and hide secret, you know, this technology's always been here. The pyramids got built using this same technology. The, you know, stones of Baalbek got built, you know, levitated. The Easter Island things. You know, the Coral Castle guy, Tesla, it's always been here and it's always going to be here. And as much as it's like that beach ball, the farther underwater you try and drag it, the more it wants to the surface. So at some point, I kind of also see this as a divine teaching tool in how to share not only technology, but ideas and resources and power. Because
absolutely. I mean, that's really what we're trying to go for, and that's, you know, that's essentially why I'm sitting on being really at least, you know, I mean, because at this point, if people want to apply this mathematics, I mean, it's kind of hard to avoid what I'm doing. So I'm sitting on that, and there are many people who want to apply it, and at the same time, only made $182, you know, because what we're trying to do first is to talk with people like yourself, to get the public into it. None of us really in this project, or I can't speak for everybody, you know, who's interested in the project, but I know I can speak for myself, and I think I can speak for Marco in that our interest is not in getting rich, but at the same time, we've got to provide for our families. So we're trying to strike this balance between, you know, sharing with the public, but trying to involve the public so that we can get the project off the ground. And people have said, why are we relying on donations when we should just be going for grants? Well, I agree. I would love to have the grant money. I just, with the madness of my own life, I just can't fulfill the duties of being a grant writer at the same time. So if there's a grant writer out there who wants to help write for the project, I mean, please contact me.
No, yeah, absolutely. And that's where I want to take, like I said, those who are awake and spur them into action, because the global economic crisis is the culmination of each of our own individual inabilities to live within our means. The, you know, health crisis is each of our own inability to remain healthy. The dumbing down of our children is, you know, our fault for sending them to schools who get progressively worse and worse and worse. So now it's up to...
I mean, you know, if free energy is possible, have we proven that? No. But we've proven things that can't be explained with any current physical models. You know, I've shown that video that I had in the TED presentation to a lot of different scientists, and I have not received a thorough or satisfactory explanation. And most of them just say, I don't know how that's doing that. You know, but if the free energy, if we can really tap into it, especially if it's done in an open public project that everyone's involved with, we don't need money. You know, I mean, that's why I think that we have to try and all come together on this from the grassroots level. But eventually, I mean, these corporations involve a lot of people, and they're not just going to disappear.
Right,
so we need to try and find a way to connect with each other to say, look, you know, we've got to move forward together and try and make this work for all of our sakes and for the sake of, you know, children being born and for the future of humanity. If this stuff is possible, we can change the whole world order. And I know that's a terrible term to use, but... you know, we can change basically the whole structure of commerce, of production, of all these things. And not to mention, if we can apply it to travel, we're not limited to one little tiny box of space.
Right.
You know, and I feel like the human mind is far too expansive to spend the majority of its time in a, you know, 10 by 10 box. And so I believe our destiny is to go beyond the planet and to move throughout the universe. And I believe that those are the implications of our work if it's applied at the level of high technology, doing plasma physics and energy on that level and applying it to aeronautics.
Right, and 'cause ultimately... You know, this is our task to, like I tell people, you know, if you're sick of the war and the fractional reserve banking and the bipartisan schizophrenic politics, you know, then it's your job to change that where the rubber meets your road. So where the New World Order meets you in your life, literally, it's up to you to change it there. So if you're sick of... you know, big international corporations bleeding you dry, stop giving them money and give money to causes like yours, or, you know, find something that will help humanity and make this change we all want to see happen where it meets in your life. If you can turn off your cable bill and cut up one credit card, you now have $90 to apply to this. And if you multiply that out times the 10 people you know, and it builds and builds and builds, because this is our responsibility from here on out. Nobody's going to bring us free energy. We will have to manifest it through our own individual actions, one at a time, then a few at a time, then collectively. And you know, that even in itself could be a Taurus if you could time lapse.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think this is far beyond any one of us. I mean, that's why it's not just in Marco's hands, or not just in my hands, or not just in some of the guys who are working on the engineering side. It's in all of our hands, and that's the whole point we're trying to make, is that, yes, if those of us who've got the background and the foundation in this and who are already advanced in this can be supported enough that I don't have to spend... you know, 60 hours a week in my restaurant, I can apply my time to teaching people, to making new discoveries, which I am doing daily, but I can only work at night. And, you know, if I can find the ways and the methods to do that in a good way, in a way that's not greedy and that shares with the public, that's really what I want to do, and it's only to initiate and help this collective process that needs to happen. And, you know, you mentioned Terrence McKenna earlier, who has been one of the biggest influences and inspirations for me in my life. And, you know, whether or not the time wave is an accurate model of reality is not so much my concern, as much as the idea behind what he was saying, I believe is absolutely true, that time, that history does have a convergence, and that things, you know, come together and then are reborn. And I think that's what he was going for with the time wave. And whether or not it relates to 2012 and how this connects to calendars, I can't say that I'm the expert on that. But I think that everybody recognizes that whether or not it's 2012 or 2020 or whenever it is, that we're definitely on the road to a major convergence that's going to have to change the way that we're living. And so, you know, our goal with this project is to reach out to people in the kindest way and the most benevolent way without judging anybody, whether you got a suit and tie on or whether, you know, you're just a kid off the street, to share it with everybody equally and to put it then in their hands. Now, if you don't believe it, that's okay. I never have a problem with anyone being critical of the work if their criticism is of the work, but 99% of the time, in fact, almost 100% of the time, I don't ever get criticisms about the content of my work. I just get personal criticisms and so-called skepticism that doesn't have content. Now, my goal in going out in TED and saying all the things that I did was twofold, and it involves both sides of this polarity. One side is I wanted to inspire the people who believe in this way and believe that we can achieve this and do it, to apply our contribution to whatever they're already doing and to advance it, you know, to take it out of my hands, to go beyond my work. The other side is to incite the people who don't believe in it to approach it too and to criticize it so that we can achieve more thoroughness, more explanation, more light on the subject. I mean, mathematically, what we're presenting, I think, it cannot be denied that it's highly significant mathematically. And even if the physics doesn't bear out, it could be completely revolutionary to computing. And we have one of the top names in the business peer review on that. So there's many different avenues. There are going to be people who are going to figure out things. In fact, every single person I teach figures out things that I would never have figured out because it's not my interest or it's just not my field or they have a knowledge that I don't have. And that's the point in all of us sharing. You know a lot more about what you know than I do. And so each person is an expert in their own reality. But what we need as people, at least what I feel that we need, is a simple way to connect our realities and to empathize and understand one another, regardless of what we've done up till now. Because ultimately, the convergence is right now. It's at every single moment. And we can turn the world around as soon as we decide to do it. But it's going to take all of us. And that's why I think what you're doing is very commendable. And we're trying to just use the media and the internet as a tool to share knowledge and information.
With the synchronicity talk you gave in that personal thing, I've also found that when you start approaching topics that way, and this may sound, again, esoteric and weird, but it's the truth. When people are sincere and their intent meshes with your own frequency and your own way to receive, I kind of term it rings differently in your head or in your heart or wherever you're receiving the information. So when I heard your TED TV talk, you know, we were 45 seconds into it, and I knew, not that you were right about everything, but your focus and your intent and the spirit behind the rest of the presentation was for me to hear. because then we have to then pass this on to those we have influence over, and snowball it out, because we all want this change. You know, a new world order is coming, and we've got to lose that negative stigma. It could be, you know, totally
enslaved. Yeah, I mean, the question is, what kind of a world order?
Right.
That's where we have to come into it.
Are we going to be totally enslaved and embroiled in World War III, or, you know, start this, you know, journey of free energy and non-Luciferian economics? You know, both of those would be completely different than what we have now. So they would be, you know, classified as new world orders. But and that's the beauty of it. It's our choice. We've just got to choose it. And we choose that with each individual action we make through the day. You know, and that's like you're saying a while ago, I started my journey in its current form by a coworker who told me, you know, not too long after 9/11 that, you know, this was all staged and the planes were remote control and, you know, the buildings just didn't fall down because of fire. I respected him enough to go prove him wrong. Well, and it was about 45 minutes into that journey. You know, not only was he not wrong, you know, it led me to where we are now. And that was, you know,
That's, you know, back to your original point, without even making any statement about 9/11 one way or another in terms of who was behind it, because I don't know, but I certainly find the official story to be inconsistent. But whoever it was and whatever it was, in the end, it's a horrible thing, and it's a tragic thing, and it's a dark thing that should never happen. And at the same time, it's brought so many of us to this place. And so sometimes, you know, I don't remember what the old phrase was, but, you know, you have to slap somebody in the face to wake them up. And I think, in a way, these kind of events have been slapping humanity in the face. Only problem is we've had far too many of them. We've had too many of these wars. And we need to find a way to give people the resources that they need, because that is what gives dictators the power. So yeah, the dictators want it, but I always feel like the dictators are very few people, and the reason that they get power is because the people are desperate. And if we can provide a way to change that status, and honestly, if we produce free energy, I mean, you can end world poverty in a very short period of time. I believe then that there's no one there to support the dictators. People will be able to, you know, people will govern themselves. And that is a tremendous change and a very difficult thing, I think, for the world scene right now to visualize without some drastic things occurring. But I think all of us, at the same time that we're doing this experimentation and working to develop our ideas, need to really consider, and we need to consider the fate of so many people, some of who, probably the majority of whom, are just ignorant of what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in a condescending way. I just mean it literally. They just don't know how much things that they're doing are affecting the world. And so by doing this and sharing this information, I think we help contribute to that. That's what we want to do.
There's all these UFO conferences they have everywhere. You know, how killer would it be to have a money bomb where you and Marco and Michael Schneider and John Hutchison and all these people who are doing the grassroots work in, you know, the broad category of free, and I always put in quote, or freer energy.
Yeah, well, we have, you know, I mean, we did the Tesla Technology Conference in Albuquerque this past summer, and Marco and myself were there, and John Searle was there, and a lot, you know, Morey King, a lot of the really big names in this field. And so it was a real honor to get to present alongside people such as them, and it was real humbling and a mind blower for me personally. But I think more of those will be coming. Tesla Tech has been one that's really reached out to us and believed in our work. And, you know, we were able to do some demonstrations of the simple technologies we've been developing. But, yeah, we, you know, me personally, I'd like to be participating in those things more and more. And I just need to find a way to create the ability for myself to be out there teaching, and then that's what I want to do, and I want to do it in a way that's affordable for people. I'm not, you know, my goal is to truly reach out to the public, and especially to the youth, because the youth are not restricted by all the same rules that I think the previous generation has been, and they're open, and they're, I think they're becoming, the world situation is humbling them more than the previous generation in some ways, and so they're more receptive towards inspiration in these matters. So I would love to continue doing this, and I, like I said at the beginning, you know, I'll be happy to take it in any direction that you want. I'm happy to go into the mathematics. It's difficult on the radio format.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy to participate however I can.
No, and you and Marco and Searle and John Hutchison, you guys have done, you know, the bulk of the initial legwork, so to speak. Now, like I keep saying, it's up to us, those who are awake now, to give you guys that gigantic shove with either spreading the information or a few dollars at a time or money bombs or, you know, word of mouth. You know, as much as I'd like to meet a Martian or, you know, somebody from Pleiadians, you know, we've got to get, you know, the Tesla tech conferences, you know, about 10 times bigger than the conspiracy conferences, you know, and in a hurry, because like I say, it's the choice between self-sacrifice or human sacrifice.
And I mean, and that's the thing with, I think what you just said is really true, that the idea of conspiracy and the fact of conspiracy, can take you so far, and I'm not discouraging any kind of research that people do, but in the end, what can you do about it? You know, I have, you know, a good friend of mine, and day in, day out, because the chemtrails or geoengineering or whatever people are going to call it are tremendously active in my area, and you know, every day I see him, he's all down about it, and he's, you know, he's depressed and he can't stop talking about it. And, you know, what I had say to him was, well, okay, well, we all know it's there. But what are we going to do about it?
Yep.
I don't have the solution to everything. But this work for me is my way to contribute, because I do believe that it, is one of many, alternate viable options. And it produces results.
Well, it's fabulous work, and I definitely grip it, so I know a lot of other people can. If you want to give out any and all of your contact information and plug everything.
And as far as getting in touch with me, my website is www.theabhakingdom.com. Abha is spelled A-B-H-A, or you can go to youtube.com/theabhakingdom. So you can get all my information there, any contact you can find there. I have a hard time recently keeping up with my emails because I get a lot of emails, but I do see them, so you know, it's just still contact me, and it takes me a little while to get back. Please be patient with me, but I can be reached by phone. I'm available most ways. I just have to do the best I can with my time, because my schedule is very busy, and I'm also, you know, in the process of meeting with people to try and see about taking this, discovering this technology to the next level. So as that unfolds, I definitely like to let people know what's going on.
I'd love to have you back in the near future, and we can go over the Abha and the other applications to this that don't involve necessarily technology. And I would actually love to have a conversation with you about synchronicity and how to guide yourself is kind of a, you know, maybe a bad way to describe it, but there's a...
Well, I love that stuff. You know, that's my favorite kind of topics, and they make for great stories and conversations. So, like I said, I'm open to any and all topics. I think that's the point of of the work that we're doing. And I almost don't ever want to call it math again because it's such a dry word. We've got to find a new word for it. So maybe if people, your listeners, can write and tell what we should call this work. Thank you anyway for having me. And like I said, any topics are game for me.
Yeah, it was excellent.
I'm on your side for sure. So thanks a lot. And please stay in touch. And I appreciate it.